Welcome back to Cyber Mornings Daily.
Always good to be back.
Today, we're doing a deep dive into three cybersecurity stories that I think are going to make you rethink some of your digital habits.
Definitely some thought-provoking ones today.
We're going to unpack a critical vulnerability
in
Microsoft's multi-factor authentication system.
Yes.
We're going to explore the growing anxieties around supply chain and device firmware security.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, we'll tackle Mozilla's decision to retire the Do Not Track feature from its Firefox browser. So
a lot to cover.
Buckle up.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's start with this Microsoft MFA vulnerability.
Okay.
It's been nicknamed Authquake.
Catchy.
This one really made me think about my own online security.
Yeah, it should.
Researchers discovered a way to bypass the MFA checks.
Right.
Potentially allowing attackers to access emails, cloud storage, all sorts of sensitive data.
That's the scary part.
The sheer scale of this vulnerability is what's so alarming. Microsoft has over 400 million paid Office 365 users.
That's a lot of potential targets.
So the potential attack surface is massive.
Huge.
So how did the attackers actually exploit this vulnerability?
Well, they targeted those time-based one-time passwords or TOTP codes that many of us use for MFA.
Yeah.
And attackers took advantage of the fact that there were no limits on how many codes you could enter in a given time frame.
Oh, interesting.
So that allowed them to just rapidly try out numerous codes, increasing their chances of hitting a valid one.
So it's like someone trying to guess your PIN at an ATM and the machine doesn't even flag them after like multiple wrong attempts.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a little unsettling.
It is. And to make matters worse, the researchers found that a single TOTP code could remain valid for several minutes beyond its supposed expiration time.
Oh, really?
Which means that, you know, even if an attacker didn't immediately guess the code, they might still have a window of opportunity to get in.
Okay, so what are the experts recommending to mitigate this kind of risk?
Well, they're suggesting kind of a multi-layered approach.
Okay.
Deploying something called privilege access management.
Yep.
Which basically limits who has access to what, like sensitive systems and data.
Right.
They also recommend enforcing conditional access policies.
Okay.
Which means setting rules about, you know, when and how users can access certain resources.
Mm.
And of course, enhancing monitoring and detection capabilities to catch that suspicious activity, you know, early on.
So it's not just about relying on MFA alone.
No.
But about creating like a web of security measures to make it much harder for attackers to slip through the cracks.
Exactly.
What does all this mean for the average person, though?
Right.
Someone who's not a cybersecurity expert.
Yeah.
You can think of MFA like a strong lock on your front door. It's an excellent first line of defense, but it's not foolproof.
True.
You might consider adding additional layers of protection, like a security system, motion sensors.
Sure.
In the digital world, this could mean using a password manager.
Yeah, those are great.
To generate and store unique and complex passwords.
Absolutely.
Or enabling biometric authentication on your devices, you know, like fingerprint, facial recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some really practical tips that anyone can implement. Mm-hmm. It's a good reminder that cybersecurity is about being proactive and taking responsibility for your own digital safety.
I agree.
Okay, before we get too sidetracked here, let's move on to our next story. This one takes us into the world of hardware.
Okay.
And raises some concerns about whether we can truly trust the devices we use every day.
You know, this is something a lot of people don't think about.
Right.
The hardware side of things.
A recent survey conducted by HP Wolf Security, this really opened my eyes to some potential vulnerabilities in the supply chain. Did you know that over half of IT professionals, they don't even verify the security of the hardware they buy?
That's a bit unnerving.
And almost as many admit that they just blindly accept whatever terms and conditions the provider gives them,
mm-hmm.
even if those terms put their security at risk.
Yeah. It's a worrying trend.
It's like buying a car without checking the brakes or the engine.
Right.
You're just placing complete trust in the manufacturer.
Hoping they have your best interests in mind.
Hoping they have your best interests in
mind. But the reality is attackers are increasingly targeting the supply chain.
Really?
Looking for those weak links that they can exploit to gain access to multiple clients.
The report even mentioned how attackers can compromise upstream providers.
Yeah.
To gain access to a whole network of clients. It's like poisoning the well at the source.
Right, at the source.
So how can organizations protect themselves from this kind of attack?
I think proactive security is key here, you know? Don't just trust the vendor blindly. Demand technical documentation from them, you know? Conduct thorough audits.
Mm.
And establish a really robust validation process.
Okay.
To ensure that devices are secure from the moment they're produced.
We obsess about updating our software and running antivirus scans.
Yeah, all the time.
But we rarely think about the security of the hardware itself.
It's a common oversight.
It's like we're focusing all our energy on locking the front door, but forgetting to secure the back door.
Exactly. And these stories are really revealing that cybersecurity is about securing the entire ecosystem, not just individual parts.
So what does this mean for the average listener?
Right.
Do we need to become cybersecurity experts to buy like a new phone or a laptop?
No, I don't think so. But it does mean doing a little bit of research before making a purchase. You know, check the vendor's security reputation, see if they've had any major security incidents in the past. Don't be afraid to ask questions about their security practices. You have the right to know what measures they're taking to protect your data.
That's a great reminder that we have more power than we think.
I do.
When it comes to our digital security. We don't have to be passive consumers.
Yeah.
We can demand better security practices from the companies we do business with.
Absolutely.
What has stood out to you so far?
Well, what's striking to me is how interconnected these stories are, you know? The Authquake vulnerability highlights the importance of layered security at the software level.
Yeah.
While the supply chain security story emphasizes the need for a holistic approach that considers the entire life cycle of a device.
Like we're starting to see the bigger picture here.
Yeah.
Cybersecurity isn't just about individual action.
It's bigger than that.
It's about understanding the complex interplay of technology, human behavior, organizational practices.
It's everything.
And that brings us to our final story for today, which focuses on a seemingly counterintuitive move by Mozilla.
Okay.
They've decided to retire the Do Not Track feature from their Firefox browser.
Interesting.
And this one caught me off guard a little bit.
Yeah.
Do Not Track was supposed to be our way of telling websites, hey, I don't want you tracking my every move online.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they get rid of something that sounds so beneficial for privacy?
Well, it turns out that Do Not Track wasn't as effective as it was intended to be.
Okay.
It relied on websites voluntarily honoring the request.
Oh, so there were no rules around it?
And as you can imagine, that didn't always happen.
No, I guess not. So it was more of a polite suggestion than a hard and fast rule.
Yeah, pretty much.
No wonder it didn't have much impact.
Right. There was no real enforcement mechanism behind it.
Okay.
In fact, in some cases, Do Not Track might have even given users a false sense of security, you know? Making them think they were protected when they weren't.
Wow. So that makes you wonder, was Do Not Track ever actually protecting anyone's privacy?
It's a question that researchers have been debating for years. While some studies suggest that Do Not Track may have had a minor impact on reducing tracking in certain cases, its overall effectiveness was questionable.
Mm-hmm.
The lack of legal backing meant that websites could essentially just ignore it, and many did.
So it seems like a classic case of good intentions not translating into real-world results.
Yeah, I think so.
But hold on. Are we saying that Mozilla is waving the white flag in the fight for online privacy?
No, not at all.
Okay.
They're simply acknowledging that Do Not Track wasn't the right tool for the job.
Okay.
And they're shifting their focus to more robust solutions, like the tell websites not to sell or share my data setting.
Okay.
This setting leverages something called the Global Privacy Control or GPC header.
Okay, so what's the difference between GPC and Do Not Track? Is GPC just a fancier name for the same thing?
Not quite.
Okay.
GPC has a much stronger legal foundation.
Interesting.
It's rooted in privacy laws like the CCPA in California.
Okay.
Which gives users more control over how their data is used and sold.
So it's like Do Not Track with teeth.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
It actually has some legal bite to it.
And because there are actual consequences for ignoring GPC requests, websites are more likely to comply.
That's good to hear. It sounds like GPC has the potential to be a more effective tool for protecting online privacy.
Yeah.
But what about other browsers?
Right.
Are they also moving away from Do Not Track?
Some browsers, like Apple Safari, they removed Do Not Track a while back.
Really?
They were concerned that it could be used for something called fingerprinting.
Fingerprinting.
Which is a technique that allows websites to identify and track users even without cookies.
Wait, you're telling me that by trying to protect my privacy with Do Not Track, I might have actually been making myself more identifiable to trackers.
It's possible,
and
yeah.
It seems counterintuitive.
It does, but that's the reality of online privacy sometimes. The very act of trying to protect your privacy can sometimes leave a trace that makes you stand out. It's like trying to blend into a crowd by wearing a brightly colored outfit.
Interesting.
You might think you're being discreet, but you're actually drawing more attention to yourself.
That's a really interesting point.
Yeah.
It shows how complex and nuanced this whole issue is.
For sure.
So if Do Not Track wasn't the answer and GPC is a step in the right direction, what else is Firefox doing to bolster privacy protections?
Well, they're continuing to enhance their other privacy features.
Okay.
One example is their enhanced tracking protection, which blocks known trackers from loading automatically. It's like having a built-in ad blocker and privacy shield all in one.
That sounds pretty handy.
Yeah.
It seems like Firefox is committed to creating a more privacy-centric browsing experience.
Yeah, they're definitely pushing for that.
But what does this all mean for the average Firefox user? Should they be concerned about this change?
I don't think so.
Okay.
You just need to be aware of the change and adjust your privacy settings accordingly. Make sure that tell websites not to sell or share my data is enabled in your settings.
Okay.
And familiarize yourself with the other privacy tools that Firefox offers. It's all about being informed and making conscious choices about your online privacy.
You've given us a lot to think about today, from MFA vulnerabilities to supply chain risks to the evolution of privacy tools like Do Not Track and GPC. It's clear that cybersecurity and privacy are constantly evolving.
Yeah, always changing.
But as we wrap up this part of our deep dive, I want to leave our listeners with a question to ponder.
Okay.
In a world where data is increasingly valuable and our online activities are constantly being tracked, what steps can we take to reclaim our privacy and control our digital footprint?
That's the question, isn't it?
It's a question worth considering as we navigate the ever-evolving landscape of cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
We'll pick up this thread in our next segment.
Sounds good.
So stay tuned.
We'll be here. It's a question that grows more pressing every day, doesn't it? Especially as our lives become, you know, more and more intertwined with technology.
Absolutely. Everywhere you turn, it feels like someone's collecting data, tracking your movements, building a profile of who you are. But let's get practical. What actions can our listeners actually take to reclaim some of that privacy? It can feel so overwhelming.
I understand that feeling. Yeah, it's easy to feel powerless against these massive data gathering systems. But there are things you can do. Awareness is the first step. You know, understand what data is being collected about you and how it's being used.
It's so easy to just click accept on those cookie banners without even thinking.
Exactly. Take the time to read privacy policies, even if they're, you know, long and confusing. And consider using privacy-focused tools and services. There are some great options out there. Browsers like Firefox and Brave search engines like DuckDuckGo.
So choosing the right tools is key. What about our online behavior itself? Are there ways to minimize that digital footprint we leave behind?
Absolutely. Be mindful of what you share online. Think before you post. Use strong privacy settings on social media. You can also limit the personal information you give to websites and apps. You know, do you really need to give them your phone number for that free trial? Probably not.
Good point. It's about being deliberate with what we share. What about data that's already out there?
Right.
There are companies that collect and sell this information.
That's true. And erasing your digital footprint completely can be tough.
Yeah.
But you can take steps to minimize the data that's easily accessible. You know, you can opt out of data broker lists, request that companies delete your data and use those privacy focused services we talked about.
So it's a mix of being proactive and cleaning up past practices.
Exactly. And it's an ongoing process. Privacy isn't a destination. It's a journey. You need to constantly be be protecting and cultivating it.
Like tending a garden.
Yeah.
You weed out unwanted data, nurture the information you want to keep private, and stay vigilant against new threats.
That's a great analogy. And just like a garden, your privacy can thrive if you give it the attention it deserves.
This has really given me a new sense of control when it comes to my online privacy.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to feel like we're at the mercy of these tech giants.
Sure.
But there are things we can do. But let's zoom out a bit.
Okay.
What role do governments and organizations play in protecting our privacy?
Right.
I mean, individual actions can only go so far.
You're right. We need strong privacy laws and regulations to hold companies accountable and set clear rules for data collection and use.
It's like traffic laws.
Yeah.
We can all try to drive safely, but we need rules of the road to prevent chaos and protect everyone.
Exactly. And we're starting to see some progress. You know, the GDPR in Europe and the CCPA in California are good examples of legislation that gives individuals more control over their data.
But these laws are just a starting point. There's still a lot of work to be done to ensure that privacy is protected in this digital age.
Absolutely. We need to keep pushing for stronger privacy laws, hold companies accountable and raise awareness about data protection.
Yeah.
And this needs to happen globally. Privacy is a fundamental human right, not something to be bartered away in the digital world.
I couldn't agree more. It's encouraging to see the conversation about privacy evolving. And that there's a growing movement to reclaim our digital rights.
It is. And remember, you have a voice in this. You can support organizations that are fighting for privacy. Contact your elected officials to advocate for stronger laws and make your voice heard through your online choices and actions.
That's a great point.
Think about this. Are you aware of the privacy settings on your phone?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I am, actually. I tend to just stick with the defaults.
That's very common, but those default settings might not align with your personal privacy preferences. It's worth taking a few minutes to explore those settings and make sure they reflect your comfort level with data sharing.
It's a good reminder that we often hand over a lot of information without even realizing it. Do you have any tips for navigating those privacy settings?
Sure.
They can be a bit of a maze sometimes.
They absolutely can. My advice would be to start with the basics. You know, look at the permissions you've granted to different apps. Do they really need access to your location, your contacts, your microphone? If not, revoke those permissions. You'd be surprised how much data you can prevent from being collected just by adjusting a few settings.
That's a great starting point. I'm definitely going to do a privacy checkup on my phone tonight.
I think everyone should.
But speaking of data collection, one thing that's always struck me is how much information we willingly share on social media. It's almost like we've become desensitized to the idea of broadcasting our lives to the world.
It's true. Social media has created this culture of oversharing.
Yeah.
But it's important to remember that every piece of information you share online becomes part of your digital footprint. And once it's out there, it can be very difficult to control.
I think a lot of people fall into the trap of thinking, well, I'm not doing anything wrong, so why should I care if someone's tracking my data? But but it's not just about hiding wrongdoing. It's about having control over your own narrative and deciding who has access to your information.
Exactly. It's about setting boundaries and protecting your right to privacy.
So for those of us who enjoy using social media but also want to, you know, be mindful of our privacy, what are some practical tips for finding that balance?
Start by reviewing your privacy settings on each platform. You can control who sees your posts, what information is visible on your profile, and how much data you share with third-party apps.
Okay.
Be selective about what you post. Mm-hmm. You know, do you really need to share your location every time you go out, or tag everyone in every photo?
Right.
Think about the potential implications before hitting that share button.
Those are great tips. It's all about being intentional and making conscious choices about our online presence.
It is.
And sometimes it's about choosing to keep things private.
Absolutely. Not everything needs to be shared with the world. Sometimes the most valuable moments are the ones we keep to ourselves.
Well said. This conversation has been incredibly insightful.
It has.
But before we get too philosophical, let's bring it back to cybersecurity.
Okay.
We've touched on individual actions.
Yeah.
But what about the role of technology itself? Are there any innovations or trends that you're excited about in terms of enhancing privacy and security?
One area that holds a lot of promise is the development of privacy enhancing technologies or PTs. These are tools and techniques that are designed to protect privacy while still allowing data to be used for beneficial purposes.
That sounds interesting. Can you give me an example of what a P might look like?
Sure. One example is differential privacy, which adds noise to data sets in a way that makes it difficult to identify individuals while still preserving the overall statistical accuracy of the data.
So it's like blurring out faces in a crowd shot. Yeah. You still see the crowd, but you can't make out individual features.
That's a great analogy. Another interesting area is homomorphic encryption, which allows computations to be performed on encrypted data without ever decrypting it.
Wow, that sounds pretty futuristic. So you could analyze sensitive data without ever actually seeing the raw data itself.
Exactly. This has huge implications for privacy, especially in fields like healthcare and finance, where sensitive data needs to be protected, but also needs to be analyzed for research or other purposes.
It seems like these PETs have the potential to revolutionize the way we handle data.
They do.
Are they widely used yet, or is this still mostly in the research phase?
Some PTs are already being used in real world applications, but others are still under development. It's a rapidly evolving field, and I'm excited to see how these technologies will shape the future of privacy and security.
It's fascinating to see how technology can be used not just to collect and exploit data, but also to protect it.
Yeah, it's a powerful tool.
But before we get carried away with the tech talk, let's take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment to continue exploring the world of cybersecurity and privacy. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Cyber Mornings Daily. It's been quite a journey today, hasn't it?
It really has.
We've explored this intricate world of cybersecurity and privacy from MFA vulnerabilities and supply chain concerns to the evolution of privacy tools like Do Not Track and GPC.
A lot to unpack.
It really underscores that cybersecurity and privacy aren't just technical issues.
Right.
They're societal issues that impact every facet of our lives.
Absolutely.
From the devices we use to the information we share, from the laws governing data collection to the choices we make online. It's all connected.
It all ties together.
But as we wrap up this episode, I want to turn it over to you, the listener.
Yeah.
What's been the most surprising takeaway for you today? What will you do differently going forward?
What stands out in your mind?
For me, it's realizing that online privacy isn't just about being careful what I post on social media.
Right.
It's about understanding that whole ecosystem of data collection and the tools I can use to protect myself. I'm gonna be more aware of the websites I visit, the apps I use, and the data I share.
That's a great point. It highlights the power of being proactive instead of reactive. You know, don't wait for a data breach or a privacy violation before you take action. Start building your privacy fortress today.
An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Oh, exactly.
Speaking of prevention, what's one piece of advice you would give our listeners to strengthen their cybersecurity and privacy?
If I could offer just one piece of advice, it would be this. Mm. Be skeptical. Don't blindly trust websites, apps, or even devices. Ask questions, read privacy policies, do your research. The more informed you are, the better equipped you'll be to protect yourself in the digital world.
That's such valuable advice. Knowledge really is power in this context.
It is.
And speaking of knowledge, this deep dive has certainly been a learning experience for me.
For me too.
What about you?
Yeah, I've enjoyed exploring these these topics with you. It's a reminder that cybersecurity and privacy are ongoing conversations.
Yeah.
They're not static concepts, but constantly evolving fields.
And that's what makes it so crucial to stay informed and engaged. We need to be active participants in shaping the future of cybersecurity and privacy.
Absolutely.
Like this is our digital world.
It is.
And we have a say in how it evolves.
You do.
We've talked about individual actions. Mm-hmm. You know, choosing privacy-focused tools and being mindful of our digital footprint.
Right.
But we also need to advocate for stronger privacy laws, mm-hmm. hold companies accountable, and support organizations that champion digital rights.
Absolutely. We have to push for change.
It's a collective effort. We need to work together to create a digital environment that is both secure and respects our fundamental right to privacy.
And remember, it's not just about protecting ourselves. It's about creating a better digital world for everyone.
Well said. I think that's a perfect note to end on. We've covered so much ground today, from the technical details of vulnerabilities to the broader societal implications of data collection and privacy. But as always, there's more to explore. I encourage you to stay curious, continue learning, and be an active participant in shaping a safer and more privacy-respecting digital future.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Thanks for joining us on Cyber Mornings Daily.
Until next time, stay safe online.